This is Joy Paris, and you're listening to the Empathy Global Podcast. Here we will come together and listen to the stories and struggles of people around the world. No blame, no political bent. We share our stories to erase the lines that are separating our increasingly fractured world. Because in the end, if nothing else, we are all profoundly human. And finding the beauty in that and being willing to feel someone else's pain, someone else's story with them, that is empathy. Are you interested in helping out our mission here at Empathy Global? Visit us at empathyglobal.org, or you can become a patron at patreon.com/empathyglobal. We have an online store with some awesome shirts that you should check out, and I will be releasing some exclusive Patreon content soon, so subscribe. Thanks so much for checking us out. Hey everybody, and thanks for tuning in. Today we're talking about toxic religion and some things that may happen in the church and traumatize some of its members, and how many people are felt that they have to keep silent. So first we're going to start by introducing ourselves. Who wants to go first?
Good morning, I'm Brandon Wilson.
All right, tell us about yourself.
I'm a musician, so... most of the time, if I'm in a church, I'm an employee. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of people kind of see your face mm-hmm. and whatnot. And so, there were like two instances that I kind of thought about to talk about. But the one that really happens more often, I would say, is more so related to the fact that I was a musician, but I wasn't always playing in church. So I go out and I might play in a bar or somewhere where you quote unquote shouldn't be, or with people that you shouldn't be with. And the thing that I got a lot of the time was, man, you shouldn't be playing in those places, man. You know, that's horrible. You know, you're going to be negatively influenced. I'm praying for you. You're straying away, and you're playing music that isn't godly, and all this, and sometimes this happened for years and years and years and years. But I found it got a little more intense. You know, when you actually become an employee, and you start to see the business kind of side of everything. And you're involved in actually being, on payroll and being a part of the church, it kind of gets a little more intense, and I kind of had to try to bring up the point, if you don't, if the church isn't signing your check at the end of the week, you have a secular job, what I'm saying? So you... two are doing the very same thing that you're looking at me and saying that I shouldn't be doing, and I kind of had to raise the point. If you're not ministering on your job, you don't have a church job, so who are you to come to me and tell me that I'm out of the will of God, or I'm doing something I shouldn't be doing, or I'm dishonoring my faith, all of these things. And
especially in this area, there's not a whole lot of gigs you can play that are concert concertos or something.
Yeah,
where
exactly.
You're in a really classy.
Even, yeah, yeah, I happen to like jazz music a lot. There's not a lot of places to do that either. What I'm saying? Not a lot of, big bands that are in constant need of, mm-hmm. Guitar players.
Yeah.
Or whatnot. I think that the way we deal with people, and it just, especially when we're talking about sin, it's just, I think we deal with it incorrectly. I think we always try to come for somebody for their sin first, and I think we kind of forget that before Christ would preach to people, he would show them love first. Mm-hmm. So the first experience you would get with him is coming from a place of love and a place of, hi, how are you? Mm-hmm. Not an immediate place of judgment. Not to say that we should let you know, not call out sin or anything, or not, you know, be complicit with things. But, you know, I feel like the way we deal with things is just so off-putting to other people, to where, you know, because if you talk to somebody who's, you know, from another religion, or you know, they don't believe, or they're agnostic, a lot of them have very logical reasons for, you know, why they don't subscribe to one particular belief. And I feel like sometimes when we argue with people, we don't.
Mm-hmm.
And we look stupid. You know what I'm saying? We look ignorant, and we act ignorant towards people sometimes. You know, I had someone who I know come up to me and says, you know, roll her eyes one day. She says, "Oh, you've been playing that secular music." And I was like, well, yeah, but I mean, you know, I said this as a joke, not to be condescending or cocky. I said, "Well, yeah, and you mean you want to see my 1099s from secular music versus church music? I can show you which one paid me more. I can show you which one paid my bills at the end of the month."
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You can't usually live fully off of
church musicians.
Yeah, you have to have multiple streams of income.
Multiple streams of income. So it's like, you know, unless you plan on paying all of my bills, I have to seek work elsewhere. And you wouldn't be upset with me if I chose an office job.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, is, like I said, a secular job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless, you know, your boss didn't hire you to minister. He hired you to punch numbers.
Yeah.
So punching numbers is church related. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Do you want to go ahead?
Sure. I'm Jennifer, and I am in my 30s, and I have a family. And my story has a lot more to do with my mom and her past and her hardships with church. When she, and I'm just going to jump right into it because it's a lot. But when my mom was a little girl, she was born into the home of a Satan worshiper. And when I say Satan worshiper, I mean bonfires, sacrificing babies, government people involved in her small town. And she and her sisters were impregnated in order to have babies to sacrifice. They needed male children, and even at a young age. And when my mom was 11 years old, she was impregnated, and her brothers had to hitchhike to a town that was down the, like, 30 minutes away, to bring in law enforcement that was not related to this cult, this Satan worshiping group, to come and get her, because the local police were involved. And so they took her out of that home, and she was placed in and out of foster homes, and most of which were better, because it wouldn't take much to be better, but they still weren't good homes. And she was abused sexually, emotionally, physically. When she was 13 years old, she looked up at the sky, and, you know, the Bible talks about creation, speaking of God and testifying to God. And she looked up at the sky and she said, "God, if you're real, show me that you're real. I want to learn about you." And a Sunday school bus, believe it or not, came to her foster home at the time and took her to church. And she learned this totally, radically different life, or at least so she thought. And she met Jesus, which did radically change her life. Unfortunately, the church that she was involved in, there was a man in power that was an evil man. And, you know, they, men who, or anyone, it doesn't have to be a man, but people who are predators look for victims, and they know how to find victims. And my mom was an easy victim. And so early on, when she first started coming to this church, he brought the whole church staff, many of whom were related to him, brought them in a meeting with her and said, "You know, you've never experienced what real love is, so we're going to show you what real love is. And many of them were sincere and God-fearing and loving and were amazing to her. But that man was not. That man then took other privileges and opportunities and got her by herself and told her other things, like whatever he was doing to her was cleansing her spirituality because she was dirty because of the way she was used before. And he proceeded to begin a multiple-year sexual assault, a series of sexual assaults, and including but not limited to molestation and rape and even physical violence. And this man was a pastor who she trusted because he was at church. And she thought that she was, you know, she thought she could believe him. And she was 13 when she started going to that church and when things started began. And even up until she was 18 and met my dad. And I want to try to leave out anything that's not really necessary to share, but, you know, just over the years, there was so much manipulation and so much where this man controlled decisions that affected my mom's life. And I'm sure many other people, I've heard of other people. But when my mom was 18, she met my dad, and very early on in their relationship, this pastor decided that they should get married to each other, and pushed them to be married even before they were ready. My mom had a lot of hurt and baggage to deal with that he knew about, that pastor knew about. My dad had no idea about, no idea the depth. He knew some, but obviously I don't believe at that time he knew what was going on between the pastor and my mom. So my parents got married, and this pastor was a part of our lives until I was 16 years old. And the domination and control that he had in our family was not evident to me fully until our family separated from him. And also as I became an adult, my mom shared more and more with me. My mom saw a Christian counselor, and the counselor helped her work through things that she had to process and wasn't allowed to process. The pastor told her she was demon-possessed, and so anything that she would say, and he told the whole church she had been demon-possessed, and so anything that she would say would be kind of negated because, you know, of the demon possession. And he just used fear as a tactic to control her and to control all of the people. I mean, to me, this is exactly the opposite of what God instituted in the church. What God instituted in the church is beautiful and is perfect, but human nature is corrupt. And when human nature is not held accountable, corruption always comes in, and a disaster is made. And when I was 16, our family left that church, and it was basically because my mom had sought counseling, and the pastor was terrified of what would come out of that counseling sessions, or that set of series of counseling sessions, and so he made things very difficult and used, just pressured her and my dad, and just basically was like, you're demon possessed, this is because of this, and basically just to where it was like either we had to agree that she was demon possessed and that she was wrong, or we had to leave. And when we left, all of my friends, as a 16-year-old, all of my friends were told that they were not allowed to speak with me. one of my friends who did keep in touch with me ended up getting expelled from the school because of it, because it was a private Christian school that was attached to it. And, you know, all the while, my mom knew that this and all of this garbage that was going on was not God and was not of God, but she had no one to tell. And when she was 16 years old and he was breaking into her apartment and raping her, she didn't tell anyone. And she didn't know to talk about it. And everyone that she would have been able to talk about it with was so loyal to this man. Some because they were related, or in some way, even if they were related to him by marriage through someone else, you know, they were still related and it was family. And you know, and so years passed from the time that she was a teenager getting assaulted to the time when she was able to speak out about it. And at one point, he thought she was pregnant. And this was about when she was, I think, like in her, between 16 and 18, at some point in there. He thought she was pregnant, and he took her out in the woods and beat her within an inch of her life, and in a most perverse and horrible way to ensure that she was not pregnant, or if she had been pregnant, that there would be no way for a baby to survive. When she went to the hospital, she was underage, and she was old enough that she was allowed to make the choice of whether or not she spoke to anyone. And so, of course, he coerced her not to speak to anyone by saying, they're going to think you're a terrible person, and they're going to, you know, say ugly things about you, and made it all about her and how awful they would perceive her to be. And that he would be there to protect her from that, and still trying to ensure that she viewed him as a rescuer, you know, and just such a tainted, disgusting person. And he was never, to this day, has never been held accountable for his actions. He's no longer in power at the church that he's at. However, his family is in power, and there are not many people who know. There's definitely not a lot of people who know the depth of all that took place, but there were other victims that were quieted, and my mom got away from that situation, and somehow my mom was able to separate that experience from God and who God was. And that's the part that's so amazing to me, but I know it's because God gave her grace that only He can give to raise four children that love God and that trust God and that know that that behavior is not God. And that is man's sin and corruption, not God's. And so she passed away a little bit over a year ago, and her legacy is four children who are adults, who have families, who love God, and who are a part of a church, and who know that church is not the culprit of this, but that man is corrupted. And so that corruption happens, whether it's in a church, in politics, in a business, anytime power goes unchecked. And I just want people to know that bad things happen everywhere. Bad things happen. There are bad people in church. There are bad people in job settings. There are bad people in foster homes. There are bad people anywhere. But that is not the system. The foster care system has, there are problems in it, but every foster care system, every foster home is not bad. Every church is not bad. Every business is not bad. And that's all.
Thank you so much for sharing that. She told me that story a few months ago, and when I decided to do this topic, I was like, okay, you have to come back and tell us that story. So I think people don't believe how extreme some of these situations can be and how far people will go to protect these types of things that happen. Or especially when it's that extreme, people just don't believe that it's true. You know, if you were to try to tell, people would never believe you, you know. And so I think that that's part of, you know, what keeps people silent for so long. It can be really, really tough. All right, Lisa.
Hi, my name is Lisa Webb. I'm 45 and retired and just enjoying life in the woods with my new husband. And my story, I have a few that I could share. I am a deacon's daughter and youth director's daughter. And yes, those things happen to us too. And but I just wanted to share with you that, you know, there's going to be a day when everybody's going to be held accountable. And, you know, God promises that vengeance is his. And, you know, he can take care of things so much better than we can. And he's the father to the fatherless. And he's the defender of the widow. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Story just touched me.
I told them before the podcast, I said, oh, someone will cry. So far, every single podcast, someone has cried. So we
yeah,
have
I'll
to
be the one probably.
So.
But he's going to make sure that everything that is done in the dark, it's going to come out in mm-hmm. the light.
Yes.
And praise God, thank you, Jesus. He's on our side. But my stories begin with I've just started college, and became pregnant outside of marriage, and we had not went to the pastor to tell them yet. And the pastor, I guess, found out, and he called my parents in. And this is the church that I had grown up in. Mm-hmm. So I was in my 20s, and we had started going there when I was 5. My dad was head deacon, my mom was youth director. We were at church more than we were at home, I think. And so the pastor called my parents in and said, y'all are a disgrace to this church, and so you need to leave. So we were kicked out because I was pregnant outside of marriage. Another one, when I had my son and I was trying to get back on track, I was working, going to school, and all of that, and getting into church as much as I could. And when I would go to church, I would like to help with the youth. And so I was helping with the youth, and the elders called me in and said, I'm sorry, but you're a single mom and that doesn't look good. So you need to step down. We don't need you, you know, teaching the youth because you're a single mom. You probably belong just in the nursery with your child. Okay. And then another one, I had went before the pastor. I was married and to another person, and I went before the pastor and told him that there were some issues in the marriage, that my husband was abusive, and would he please talk to him, and maybe we could get some counseling, and he could get better, and all of this. And the pastor said, well, he's my friend, and so I don't think it's best that I talk to him. And so he gave us a name and a number of somebody. And so I would say, well, he's not going to go to this other person. And I would continue going up to this pastor, and he still wouldn't see us. He kind of swept it under the rug because my ex was deacon in the church, or I'm sorry, not deacon. He was a usher and trustee and taught the boys' classes, you know, that kind of stuff. And so he didn't want to get involved. And so I was also in a Celebrate Recovery's 12-step program group in that church as well. And I was sharing that I was getting ready to leave my ex, and that I had to do it in private without my ex knowing about it. And I was sharing this. And those 12-step programs, what's said in those programs at those times stays in those meetings. Mm-hmm. Nothing is shared. It's not supposed to go outside of those walls. And so I thought that I could trust the people that were in there, especially the leader. And the leader, who was also in pastoral care, she came up to me. I was getting ready. I mean, I only had a few weeks left, and I could get out. And she came up to me. She said, "I have to go before the pastor and let him know what's going on, since y'all are members of that church." And I'm like, "You can't. He's friends with him, and is probably going to tell him what's going on. And I can't have you do that. You're going to put me and my boys in danger." And she says, "You have a week." So I had to hurry up and get everything gone and get it out and get moved very quickly. And so that was another one. Like you were saying, churches are not perfect. They're made up of imperfect people. Mm-hmm. We are sinners trying to find a way to be set free. Mm-hmm. And it's just like Jesus was talking. He said that in Luke, he said, "I've come for those that are sick." The doctor doesn't come to help those that are healthy. Mm-hmm. He comes for those that are sick. Mm-hmm. And he was going to the sinners and eating with them. And the Pharisees just couldn't believe it. Mm-hmm. And they were asking him, and he's like, "I didn't come for the righteous. I came to heal the sick," mm-hmm. "and the lost, to save the lost." Mm-hmm. And that's what churches are made of. And yes, we've all been through some really horrible things. I mean, oh my goodness gracious, it just touches my heart when people are hurt, especially mm-hmm. by people who we think that we can trust. Mm-hmm. And it just breaks my heart. But we have to understand that it's not everybody in the church, and it's not God. Mm-hmm. God is not doing this to us. Right. It's people. It's people who are not perfect. It's people who do not understand what we're going through. People who have never been in our shoes, and they don't understand how to handle it. They don't understand how to come before us and talk to us. And I'm so happy that you're doing this, because there was a friend of mine that he got up and he shared his testimony before a church, and it was a pretty horrifying testimony. And when he did, before that, he was friends with everybody. And then as soon as he shared his testimony and he shared what was going on in his life, he was shunned. And now he doesn't want anything to do with church. He can't stand church. He doesn't want anything to do with the people in the church, because they're quote-unquote hypocrites. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, people need to hear this. They need to know what's going on. They need to understand. They need to be more sympathetic, mm-hmm. so that this doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Julie, if I may, I think a lot of times in the church we have to put on this cloak of imperfection. We were talking about it a little bit earlier, where no one's allowed to discuss their vulnerabilities, and we're not allowed to discuss that we have struggles, and mm-hmm. everything's just supposed to look like happy, perfect people in this environment here in church, because that's just the way it's like traditionally supposed to be, and that isn't reality, and that's not what God's calling the church to be. God calls us to be holy and to strive to be Christ-like and to bear the fruit of the Spirit. But God knows that we are but flesh, and that we, in our own strength, we can't do it. And until we reach heaven, we're not going to be perfect. And God knows that, and God understands that. But sometimes we don't understand it ourselves, and we don't allow room for a struggle, and we don't allow room for those imperfections and mistakes that are inevitable. And so we have to go to church and pretend like we've got it all together, when in reality we said horrible things on the way to church to our kids because they weren't getting their shoes on, or whatever it is, you know. But when you're afraid to share imperfections, then there's that fear of being able to tell somebody, "This really big thing is going on, and it's ugly. And so if we can't even share little imperfections, like I get angry sometimes and it's crossing up, like I shouldn't be angry and yelling or whatever. If we can't share that with the people at church that are supposed to be bearing our burdens, right? If we can't share that at church, then we definitely can't share about someone mistreating us, especially someone who's at church mistreating us. Mm-hmm. And because that's really dark and really dirty and really scary. And I think what you said, Lisa, where people are afraid to hear that because they don't know how to deal with it or what to do with it. But when there's something illegal going on, the law needs to be involved. If the law had been involved when my mom was a 16-year-old girl being assaulted by her pastor regularly, that man would not have had opportunity to hurt anyone else.
Exactly.
And because so much time passed before my mom was able to talk about it, other people were inevitably hurt. But it's because there's this fear of being imperfect. We can't talk about that. But we are. God knows we're imperfect. We know we're imperfect. We can let other people know that we're imperfect because it's in our imperfections that God's strength is demonstrated.
Amen. Yes, amen.
And in our weakness, He's made strong.
Yes.
And if we don't have any weakness, what do we need a Savior for?
Amen. That's good.
Amen. So I went to a Celebrate Recovery Leadership Conference about a year and a half ago, and everybody that was there had gone through the program themselves. And for anyone that's listening that doesn't know what Celebrate Recovery is, it's a 12-step program, but it's for anything, and they always say it's for your hurts, habits, and hang-ups. Mm-hmm. And so some people have, like, drug addictions they're recovering from. Some people it's eating disorder. Some people it's just simply codependency. It could be, like, an assault that you were a victim of that you're, you know, rebuilding from, you know, or you're learning how to cope. And so how you introduce yourself in those meetings, you know, AA meetings, they'll say, hi, I'm so-and-so, and I'm an alcoholic, right? In Celebrate Recovery, they say, hi, my name is Joy, I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ, and I struggle with blank. And so even at the leadership conference, when they had some videos from people from Saddleback Church who created Celebrate Recovery, and, you know, they're leaders of, like, the whole program. And so even they would say, hi, I'm so-and-so. I'm one of the creators of, you know, the Celebrate Recovery program, and I struggle with, like, you know, so it's like, you're the head of it, but you still are being transparent.
Yeah.
And so it's like every person I met, every person that came up on the stage and shared their testimony, every person that was just there to attend the training, they introduced themselves that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like I'm saying that my struggles, like, define me necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's sharing that you're an overcomer of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was neat to be in a room with people who, like, this was our calling. And I felt like, I was like, this is the church.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
A place that's where good. People can come and say, my name is so-and-so, this is what I'm struggling with, mm-hmm. and I'm currently working to overcome it with God's help.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
good.
The other people, you know, when you sit down and you share, when you're in part of a group, there are rules against another person trying to fix you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think that that's important. Now, I think it's different when you have, like, leadership or something, or someone who's unwilling to recognize that they have a massive, mm-hmm. like, issue that's maybe hurting other members or mm-hmm. something, you know, like your ex-husband, for example. I think that's something where maybe a pastor should step in and say, this is not mm-hmm. okay, and you are hurting other people, mm-hmm. and what can we do to, mm-hmm. you know, help you go to counseling or something. But just the idea that I know I'm imperfect and you don't have to tell me that,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, I know what I'm working on right now, and I'm mm-hmm. sure there are 1,000 other things I also need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe this is my one or two things, or maybe this is the root mm-hmm. of all those problems. Like, I remember, I did Celebrate Recovery years ago. That's actually how I met Lisa. And, we had to do a spiritual inventory, and you had to write down, there was all these different aspects of your life, and you had to write down, like, where you are in those different parts. And they said it was basically going to be like opening a closet that you've been stuffing things in for years.
Mm-hmm.
And you can barely open it. You open it a tiny bit just to throw something else in there. But you're going to have to open it and everything is going to come out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can kind of sort that down to where the root
mm-hmm.
of some of these things are. Because the truth is, it may be 12 things that you are doing in your behavior that maybe you're not happy with. But it's coming from a past
mm-hmm.
hurt. And it's really just that one thing
yeah.
you haven't healed from that you are
mm-hmm.
Reacting to.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's multiple things. And so if you can define what that thing is that
mm-hmm.
you're working to heal, then
mm-hmm.
all of the other branches are
mm-hmm.
sort of affected by that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's neat to be in a situation where, yeah, like you'll have a sponsor who's kind
mm-hmm.
of like keeping you accountable to what you said that you are there to work on. But
mm-hmm.
everybody knows that they're imperfect. Everybody knows that they have a journey to be on, and they're currently working it, and they're working the 12 steps,
mm-hmm.
and they have a sponsor who's, you know, checking on them. And I just think it's neat to be in, like, that honest
mm-hmm.
of a situation. And people have empathy. Like, I specifically remember some of Lisa's sharing in our group, and feeling like, oh, I'm not the only one who feels this way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And just to feel like, and it was a totally different situation,
mm-hmm.
and I was a lot younger than her, and like,
mm-hmm.
our, you know, but it was just like, no, we're not all perfect.
Right.
Like, we come to this group and we say, look, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there are a lot of situations like that, but I would like to see the whole church look like that,
mm-hmm.
where we can say everybody has a hurt habit or hang up,
yeah.
not just alcoholics or drug addictions,
mm-hmm.
Or, you know, just like the quote-unquote big things,
mm-hmm.
the things that, like, pastors get kicked out of churches for or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, but, like you said, Jennifer, that sometimes if we can't share the small things, then they snowball.
Mm-hmm.
So if, like, I start having trouble with a really small thing in my life,
mm-hmm.
And I can't share that,
mm-hmm.
and especially if I'm in leadership, sometimes if you share something, they'll say, maybe you're not prepared to be in leadership at this
mm-hmm.
moment, and
mm-hmm.
maybe that's my whole salary, and I'm supporting my wife
right.
and kids or something, right?
Right.
And mm-hmm. so if I share that, I might lose my whole job.
Mm-hmm.
And church jobs are not hard, they're not easy to come by,
right.
so it's like, oh, what am I going to do? Go sell insurance, and like maybe my wife will have to go back to work, or you know, whatever,
right.
while I'm schooling kids. I mean, it's just everything.
Right.
And so if it's tied to that, sometimes it can be really scary, to be honest, and then it will snowball, because
mm-hmm.
it will inevitably, if you don't share it, it will
mm-hmm.
get worse.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Every time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's how some of these situations get to that point, you know,
mm-hmm.
where maybe as a child they were struggling, but the parents were also in some sort of leadership and didn't want to admit that their kid had issues, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so then it becomes an adult who has scary problems,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so I think it's important. And this is one thing that I was listening to a podcast this week where they were talking about, like, what recently came out about the Catholic Church, and like we've sort of known like individual situations about the Catholic Church, but this looked to be a rampant problem in a specific sect of the Catholic Church, and they were talking about like how this kind of ties into like politics and other systems and institutions, and how sometimes we're so loyal to our institution. Like, let's say some of these heads of the Catholic Church who knew what was going on,
mm-hmm.
they didn't want the church to look bad,
mm-hmm.
because they believed in like the mission of what the church originally was there for,
mm-hmm.
so they brushed these things under the rug in order to try to save
mm-hmm.
the church. And what happens is, if you're so loyal to the institution,
mm-hmm.
that you end up either destroying the institution from the inside out,
mm-hmm.
or changing what it was there to be, like, at all, you
mm-hmm.
know. So like if you have so many situations where priests are abusing children, is that even a church anymore?
Mm.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
now it's like a sex ring. That's what
exactly.
it becomes, right?
Yes, exactly.
And so I'm not saying that every Catholic church is that way. But what I'm saying is, if you let the problem grow so big,
mm-hmm.
the institution you're protecting is no longer that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's important that when small things are happening, or big things are happening, right? But that we are honest from the get-go,
mm-hmm.
and that even if someone is in leadership, or even if somebody, you know, it might be hard to come out about something because of, like, the ramifications, that we need to hold our institutions accountable in order to protect them in being the thing that we believe in to begin with, you
mm-hmm.
know? And a lot of people either don't do that, or they just leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you see, like, this bunch of people leave and nobody really knows why. And then the problems just start all over with new members.
Exactly.
Because nothing changed. And so I think it's important to be honest about those things and to hold our leadership accountable and to hold our institutions accountable. And the reason I say institution instead of church is because this can happen anywhere. And we were talking about this before the podcast, you know, this happens in companies, you know, where you find out one of the shareholders is like insider trading or something, and then they sweep it under the rug, and then at 10 years later, the whole institution goes under, the whole business loses everything, because if they had just fired that one person to begin with, then maybe would have been able to survive, even though it would have taken a hit at that time. And so, you know, this happens in churches, it happens in politics a lot. Specifically because you have people who, I mean, the idea of being a politician is looking good in order to get votes, right?
Exactly.
So all of that is about sweeping things under the rug.
Right.
And, you know, you have different types of clubs, you have all different kinds of things. It can be any group that you're in. It could be public schools. I mean, there's so much stuff that happens in public schools, but I do see that... in protection of children does seem to be paramount. Like, they do a good job of, once someone is accused of something, they are put on leave until there's an investigation. So I don't feel that there's as much of, like, those types of big things swept under the rugs, but it can happen anywhere. It can happen in any sort of institution. So if it's an institution that you care about, then we have to keep it pure as much as we can. And I don't think that means, like, gossip necessarily about, you know, oh, I don't like that person, you know, whatever, because gossip is basically talking about somebody without talking to that person. And so I think sometimes it's important to, like, approach our leaders directly and say, this is not something that I'm okay with, or whatever. But especially if there's wrongdoing, or if there's something that's turning people away, like in your situation, Brandon, like, if you're like, okay, I don't feel comfortable inviting, I'm going to these bars and I'm meeting a lot of non-Christian people, and maybe I want to bring them to church, but if you treat me this way, how are you going to treat the friends I bring?
Yeah. Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you can share something like that with the church, and you can say, look, this doesn't seem to be a situation where, you know, the Great Commission was to go and make disciples. And so it's like, if this church isn't creating a situation where I feel that I can do that, that seems to me like the mission isn't what it says it is, right? And so I feel like that's something you can sort of talk to leaders about, or talk to groups about, instead of it being like just the way it is, you know, and we just accept it or we leave.
And I have been somewhere where I did decide, hey man, why don't you just come to church, and a friend of mine, like, he's got a friend of mine that's kind of a little wild, you know what I'm saying, which is fine, you know what I'm saying, you know, Paul was a murderer, so
exactly,
I'm not, you know, that was an extreme. But you know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, Paul used to murder Christians, right? Or Saul, when he was Saul, right?
Right.
So, and he wrote, you know, some of the greatest works in the New Testament, right?
Exactly.
He wrote the book of Acts, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I could tell the look on the faces when my friend came in the church and said, oh, is that your boy? That's your friend? I'm like, oh, yeah, that's my friend. He's like, oh. It's like, okay. Like, isn't the premise that you're supposed to just, he's here.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't stay for the whole sermon, but he's here. You know what I'm saying? That's the start. That's where it starts. You know what I'm saying? A spark becomes a fire.
Exactly.
So, but if you put the spark out.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You don't have a fire. You're going to freeze.
You're not
gonna, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
So. You know, I think that the way we deal with people, it comes off as ignorant. Like I said, that, you know, we need to start being more informed on our faith. I think we need to be informed about other faiths too. And I think it's okay to be informed. I think it's okay. You can read a book on Buddhism and you don't have to convert. It's okay.
Yeah.
You can read the book.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
Knowledge is not the enemy.
Knowledge
exactly.
is not the enemy. You know, that's in the Bible. People suffer for lack of knowledge. If you can go to someone on their terms and know about who they are and where they come from, it's easier for you to then convince them without, you know, coming at them with this whole load of stuff they don't want to hear. It's like you said, I'm already imperfect. I don't need you to tell me that.
Yeah.
I know I'm an alcoholic. You know what I'm saying? I know I'm a drug addict. You know what I'm saying? I know.
I'm working on that.
Yeah, I know I'd fornicate, or you know, I'm sorry, I don't need you to tell me all that. No, please hold me accountable if you see me doing things that are just like in the open. It's like, hey, because we are supposed to hold each other accountable.
Maybe there are ways that we can help encourage people. And I think the interesting thing is that I feel like we've gotten to a situation where we're so afraid of sin, but we don't realize what sin really is. And what it is just a departure from the life that God gave us, like in the Garden of Eden, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the reason that certain things are, we're not supposed to do is for our own good.
Mm-hmm.
It's because, you know, if you are getting wasted at a bar every night, I don't know many people who do that are really genuinely happy in their life.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
You get to a point where you're wasting your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's like, I need to stay away from that person, like they're in sin. I think it's like, man, like God didn't want this life for us,
right?
You know, and I
he
think so
abundant life.
Yeah,
I mean that's what he's calling us to, abundant life. How is that abundant life?
Right. Mm-hmm. And
it's
so
not...
and I think that if we approach it, if we think of it like that, then it's not such a scary, like, there's this top things, right, that you can't do and get away with in the church, right? So it's sex, anything related to sex, getting pregnant
mm-hmm.
outside of marriage,
mm-hmm.
pornography, those types of things. And then there's alcohol and drugs. And so those are, like, the top three. So if you say, I get angry sometimes, I lie sometimes, okay, those things you can get away with. But the other, those are the scary
mm-hmm.
things.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, tell somebody that you fornicated with somebody in the church.
Yep.
You know, and watch you. You know what I'm saying? But then the Bible also says all sin is equal in God's eyes.
Right.
So it's like, okay, so you're excusing this one, but you want to see.
Yeah, yeah.
Where's the line?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's obviously a difference between, like, hurting other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think any type of organization, like, their goal should be to protect the other members,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
If a person is harming another person in whatever way,
mm-hmm.
then that person needs to be held accountable, mostly to protect the other members,
mm-hmm.
right? Or to protect the person who is the victim. So I'm not saying like we're just okay with that. But when it's sin that's not necessarily harming other members, I think we need to look at it less as like, oh, you're not one of us or something. Like this really weird
mm-hmm.
like separation where it's like, oh, you're like way far gone or something, and we like separate ourselves from people instead of saying, look, like there's a reason that certain things are in the Bible and it's for us to live an abundant life, and
mm-hmm.
because God wants the best for us
mm-hmm.
when we're here, and you know, not that we're just like, yeah, just do whatever
mm-hmm.
you want and like whatever, because we care about them too much, you
right.
know. Like I had an ex-boyfriend that I remember, like, we'd broken up way before. And I found out from some of his friends that he was doing, like, acid and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I just sent him a text message, and I was like, look, I'm not, like, judging you and saying, like, you need to stop. But I know what life you want, and you've told me the life that you want,
mm-hmm.
and you've told me the things you want to do with your life, and this isn't that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I care about you too much to say nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want you to know that, like, I believe that those things that you want in your life can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that you are better than this.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, just want you to know that because I care about you too much.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
it's not like I'm pushing. It's not like, how dare you? It's like, hey, I want more for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, what a different approach. Like, when your friend came in the church, if they look like, dude, this guy's here and maybe isn't living the life that he's totally happy with, or maybe wouldn't come in the door, and maybe we want to share with them that God has a better life.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, and Jesus lived, if you look at the life of Christ, he ate dinner with publicans and sinners.
Yeah.
Like, that's who,
exactly.
And he was a friend to those people
mm-hmm.
who needed a friend.
Exactly.
Like,
yes.
Like you said earlier, those who are sick, they need the physician, you
exactly.
know? And Jesus was a friend to sinners, and he loved on them. He called out sin,
yes.
but he loved on those people. Like you said, he loved them first. He people don't care how much you know or what you have to say until they know they care about that you care about them.
Exactly.
They just don't. They don't want to hear what you have to say if you're a jerk about it.
Right.
Plus,
exactly.
If you're a jerk about it, then it's really more about you and it's less about them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, if you really care about the person, then you're going to go and be there for them and you're going to help them. And I went to National Community Church on my tour this summer. And they were talking about the man who was paralyzed, and his friends brought him on his mat, and they dropped him through the roof. And they said, God, Jesus healed the man because of the faith of his friends. And our mat is all of our things, all of our things that we would like to change about ourselves, and all of the things that we're trying to overcome. And if we're not willing to share, to let our friends carry our mat, then we're going to just stay there. And if we're not willing to carry somebody else's mat, then we may be standing in the way of their miracle.
Well, and that's what church is, carrying each other's mats together, helping each other.
And if we all pretend that we can walk,
we're all just laying out our mats at home, and not having abundant life.
Right. And so I think it's just less about like pointing out like, oh, this is about a problem with you or something. And it's more about like, if you genuinely care about that person, like what can you do to help? And if it's, if I just sit on the judgment seat and I do things like stand on the street corner and hold a sign saying, like, you're going to hell, that's about me then, right? It's not about really helping another person, because I know that's not going to help a person. A person's not going to be like, you're kidding, I'm going to hell? I got to talk to this guy and fix that.
Yeah, let me just tell Jesus.
So you're doing it to make yourself feel better, because you're like, oh, I'm evangelizing. No, you're not.
No.
Or because you've been told something, and instead of doing some investigative work about the life of Christ, you buy into that theory that this is the way to reach others, and it's not. That's not
no,
the way
that
Jesus
is
did it.
Yeah. Definitely not. I mean, like you said, Jesus went to them and he fed them. You know, when he spoke to them, he took the loaves and the fish and he fed them. That's what they needed.
Well, and his disciples, he called them out of lives. Matthew was a tax collector.
Exactly.
And that's like the most shyster job that there was, you know.
Nobody like you.
But so. But Jesus went to them right where they were, and you know, and I've praised God, I've been able to be in missions and so forth, and go and feed the homeless, you know, give them clothes that they can wear, give the kids the toys that they don't have, you know, and going and building churches and orphanages and, you know, and things like that. And that's what they need. That's how we evangelize. That's how we share God's love. And once they see God's love, like you were talking about earlier, then they're gonna want to come and talk to us and say, hey, what are you about?
Why are you doing this
kind of thing? And yes, we are supposed to carry each other's burdens,
and we're supposed to meet their physical needs.
Exactly.
And I just think we put all that aside, and we'd rather, because it's easier to just judge and say, well, I would never do that. It's so much easier to do that,
put in that situation.
Exactly.
Yes. And I asked them a question, because a lot of the times at the Bible study, the church that I play at right now, he'll have questions at the end. And somebody had actually asked him a question about a circular drive, and my current pastor is great. He used to be a musician, so he's got an interesting perspective. And he was like, well, what are you doing in that job?
I think
negates whether or not it's justified.
Yeah.
And he's like, how are you using it to further your faith, your ministry? Because that can be your pulpit. That
Exactly.
It can be where you become a light. So he said, how to use it. And then I kind of elaborated on it, because, of course, you know, I'm a musician, so I'm going to ask the big question. And he said, well, he gave me a great example of when he and a friend of his were younger. They had made, you know, a promise that, you know, they would never play for a secular artist or whatever. And then his friend called him and said, well, hey, man, I offer this gig. And it's this artist is like, oh, I thought we said we'd never do that. He said, we sure did. And then he said all that to say, see, you say, you know, you won't do something because you've never been put in the situation to do it. But if somebody was to put you in a situation, most likely you're going to do it. And obviously somebody had come to him and gave him a fair offer and say, hey, I want you to do this. Can you come play for me? He's like, oh, yeah. Okay, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? You haven't been put in the situation to, so
exactly.
You can't say that you wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
And see, you're going to be able to minister to people that your pastor is not going to be able to minister to. You know, we are ministers wherever we go.
Mm-hmm.
We are sharing God's love and ministering to those in need, the ones that need food, that need clothing, that need to have an ear just to listen to them, and you know, a shoulder to cry on or whatever. You're going to be able to witness to people that in music. You're going to be able to witness to your family and things that you do, and I'm going to be able to witness to my family and you're doing this. And so we are all part of God's body.
Yeah.
You know, some of us are the hands, some of us are the feet, you know, whatever. But
mm-hmm.
we are all put in different positions in life, and that is where we are to minister to the others.
Yeah.
So I liked how you put that.
We have to start wrapping up, but I like to do this card game at the end. So we have about 5 minutes, so everybody will have about a minute to share. So everybody just grab a card. Who wants to go first?
Okay.
Okay, just make it quick so we
yes.
can wrap up. Yeah.
How does courage manifest in your work? I think this goes so much with what we've been talking about. It takes courage to speak out. It takes courage to be vulnerable. I work in the church, and it takes courage for me as a leader to be vulnerable to the people around me. But my ministry is most effective when I have courage and I'm vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Brené Brown says, vulnerability is not weakness, it is your most accurate measure of courage.
Amen.
Mm-hmm.
And I
That's
love
good.
That so much.
Mm-hmm.
All right, who wants to go next?
What about you most comforts others? I think probably that I try my best to be real.
Mm-hmm.
I try not to judge others because I know what it feels like to be judged.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to be there for people. I love people.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to be there for them. And when I see someone hurting, I just want to go and just hug them and kiss them and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and fix everything, which I know I can't fix anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to be there for them. I want
mm-hmm.
to be real. I want to show them that they're not the only ones going through this,
mm-hmm.
that there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
It says, when is failure productive, which is, God, that's a good one.
I love this card set.
I love this
uh-huh.
card.
It's called Provocative Questions for Applied Empathy.
Oh.
This is great. So I think failure is productive if you've not chosen to wallow in your failure and choose to go beyond your failure. I think it's productive when you take failure and you learn it and you say, okay, well, this idea didn't work. And try another one. So you have multiple plans, multiple paths to go towards the same goal, accepting that maybe your plan might not work, but you might have to form another plan to find another path.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's productive when you learn from your failure.
That's good.
It's important to learn and not wallow.
That's
mm-hmm.
good.
Sometimes
good.
We wallow.
Mm-hmm.
Which is okay for a time, but you definitely have to eventually move beyond.
That's good.
Mine says, when has mentorship played a role in your life? It's funny because, like, I'm, like, a super, super, like, individualistic person. Like, I wasn't as much growing up, and so, like, I kind of learned that lesson being let down by a lot of people that I was like, I gotta take care of me. And just started to, like, I don't know, it's very hard for me to ask for help and things like that. And so, like, every time I would take these personality tests and would say, what career should you do? It always said, like, therapy or counseling. And I was like, nope. And, like, I would do, like, everything else. I got a business degree, you know. And then I became a teacher. And I was like, I don't. I feel like now with teacher, the struggle is there's too many of them. And I can't really, like, spend time individually with them like I would like to. And, like, the older I've gotten and the more I've developed, the more I, like, feel the need to make that difference, you know, and to, like, try to carry other people's burdens and, like, you know, do what I can. And so I just started my master's program in mental health counseling and starting a Silver Recovery Group. And it's funny because I've been reading Brené Brown's work, which I think was, like, kind of like the catalyst to my kind of figuring stuff out for myself and what I wanted to do. And her new book comes out in October, and the title of it is Dare to Lead. And, like, all the other books were kind of, like, like, one was Gift of Imperfections, how to kind of, like, find, you know, value in your imperfections. Then it was Daring Greatly, like, how to go out and do the things you're called to do and all these things. And so I've been kind of following this journey, and now her new book, and it was just funny because it's, like, a couple months after I signed up for my master's program, and I started this podcast a year ago, and I went out on the road in the summer to, like, go and meet strangers and, like, ask them questions. So to me, there's just a lot of things that are sort of like confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like mentorship, it's like been following me my whole life. Like, this is what you need to do somehow,
mm-hmm.
some way. And I was
mm-hmm.
like, nah. And then finally, like, it's pulling me in.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, thank you guys so much for being on the podcast.
Thank
really,
you.
Really
Thank
really
you so much
it.
For doing
it's
this.
Such a good topic. So
yes.
We have a couple coming up soon. I think we're going to do the stigmas behind mental health and eating disorders next. So I'm not sure what order. I'm going to have to see which guests are available first. But for those of you listening, that's what we have on the docket coming soon. So thank you so much for tuning in.